What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today.
On the phone with me, I have a very talented musician. With his talent as a multi-instrumentalist, he was able to serve as music director for R&B songstress Regina Bell, and has also released two top singles, which crossed over to become top 30 on the pop charts. Please put your hands together and welcome singer, songwriter, and music producer, Chris Walker. What's happening, Chris?
Hey, glad to be here.
Oh, man, appreciate you taking your time and chopping it up with me, Chris. The tracks that you sent me, man, are just phenomenal. I love the vocals. I love the production. It's just top 10 all the way, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Man. No, you know, a couple of tracks that, you know, stick out to me, the ones you sent, Everyday Woman, I love that one, man. You know, because a lot of your flavor is really going back to the old school R&B roots. Exactly. You know, and I think a lot of times, you know, we're listening to a lot of R&B that's out today, and it's just not really giving me that old school flavor that I'm used to hearing. You know, I started tracking recording, man, late 80s, early 90s. And, okay. You know, I'm coming from the background with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Teddy Riley, the Babyface, and, you know, just to hear that elements and originality again, man, is really refreshing to the ear, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, yeah, it's hot stuff, man. It's on fire. So how did you start as a musician, Chris, and a songwriter, man? When did this kind of evolve into a full-time profession for you?
Well, it started as a full-time profession, I'd say, in high school. Actually, probably before, with my family gospel group, the Walker Brothers. But once I started attending the high school for the performing and visual arts and learning how to read music and score it and arrange it, that's when my musical, it just branched out. I mean, from there, I mean, I started doing R&B stuff, jazz stuff, gospel stuff, and it was a platform to launch me in New York City.
So who were some of your influences coming up as a music producer and songwriter, man? Who did you kind of, you know, follow that map of production that really kind of evolved into your own sound?
Well, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of gospel music, the Winans. I mean, you know, my household, my family really didn't allow us to listen to secular music. But after arriving in New York City and I was exposed to so many different genres of music, I started checking out various producers. And of course, you know, I met Teddy Riley back years ago and was in the studio with him when he was working with Guy a lot of times. So I was just pay attention and watch what those guys did, and I would study David Foster's and from an arranging standpoint, you know, and the things that he would do, and I just kind of, you know, pulled from some of the best guys and said, oh, I like this, I'm going to pull this, and then I kind of mixed Chris in there somehow and to create the sound that you hear today.
Give me some background of how the gospel genre really influenced your sound also, because I hear a lot of the chord combination that you're using, like, ooh, that's kind of gospel R&B, but it's still got that soul flavor, man.
Right. Well, of course, you know, in church nowadays, I mean, the music is so complex. It's today. But of course, when I was growing up, it wasn't as complex. But church, it's like I tried to find a way to bridge a little of that into what I do, but keep it R&B. There are certain rules that you kind of sort of can't cross in R&B. I mean, certain chord changes that are gospel that you won't put in an R&B song, for example. But what I try to do now is take the listener on a journey by incorporating, you know, changes that take you somewhere and melodies and harmonies that take you to a different place other than just a song being 3 to 4 chords and that's the whole song.
Right.
you well, know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, man. So, you know, some people say, oh, it's cookie cutter beats. Well, like, well, you know, again, we definitely have to stick to a format as far as chord progressions are concerned. You know, a lot of the R&B that's out there and that's been out there, it's a combination of your major and minor progressions. A lot of major and minor 7/9 chords, diminish, augmented. But, you know, getting into the gospel is when you start throwing those triads and those tritones in your combination of your chord progressions.
That's right.
You know, and that's right. To give you that gospel flavor. So you definitely don't want to put that in R&B.
Not yet. It hasn't progressed that far.
Right. But, you know, yet. It should, though, because it's, I tell guys as keyboarders, like, man, it's a really nice progression to play. but you don't want to play it throughout the whole entire song where it's expected and you're expected here at that point. It's just something that you just, almost like a substitute chord almost, you know what I mean? And instead of using that minor progression, you could throw that triad in there and see how that works for you, you know? So yeah, I definitely hear you, man.
And that's true. And actually, I tried that on like the song, That's What It Feels Like, for example. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to hear that one, but if once you check it out, you'll hear I really stuck some of the in that song.
Nice. No, I mean, that's just where it's at for me as a producer also. You know, aside from being a keyboardist, we got to think as the overall project sometimes. And, you know, the placement arrangements for chord progressions really what builds the song. And it gives it that foundation, really gives it that melodic flavor where other musicians can kind of join in. But, you know, if it's really all over the place and there's just no structure behind it, it's just pretty chords, you really don't have a song.
Right. And I usually have a rule of thumb, too. It's like if anything gets in the way of the lead vocal, it doesn't need to be there.
That's right.
That's my pretty much my rule. And a lot of times I like to record the lead first and then put the colors on top around the lead, as opposed to creating the whole track and then putting the lead and trying to stay out of the way, you know, of what's going on. I sometimes reverse the process and put the lead with just the basic tracks and then stack everything else around what the lead vocal is doing to enhance it and not get in the way.
Oh, totally, man. I talk a lot, you know, talk a lot about that also. You know, I guess it's nothing that you guys aren't doing, but I just felt that, you know, producing artists, you know, finding that space for a songstress to lay over your tracks is really important. You know, because sometimes you look at them in the studio and you hear them laying, it's like, man, is it too busy? I mean, do they feel it's overcrowded where they just don't have the space? You know, so I found myself just giving them a basic foundation track just to lay the basic vocals down, the chorus, your backs. And then when they leave the studio, that's when I strip all the music down and start to build the composition around the pre-existing vocals, like you mentioned before, because then it really defines the song. You're able to mold that song, the composition, around the vocalist instead of vice versa. I don't think the vocalist should, you know, try to complement the song. I really think it's the producer's job to really build the song around the vocalist.
Now, here's a Houdini trick.
I'm ready.
What do you do when you have a vocalist, you're producing a vocalist, and they feel they have this defeated feeling in the vocal booth, as if they're not giving you what you want? How do you get them to come out of that and give you exactly what you want?
You know, for me, I really try to understand who it is I'm working with. You know, because personality really shows in the studio also. You know what I mean? I think everybody, whether they want to admit it or not, your personality comes into your music. You know, and whether it's upbeat, I can kind of tell what kind of personality you got. You know what I mean? And if you're feeling that you're not giving me 100%, for one, it's the confidence. It could just be we're new working with each other. And, you know, I can always go back to some of your old tracks. And it's like, man, this is you as an artist. This is where you're shining. We got to bring that essence into the vocal booth. And if it's the song that is not really giving you that confidence to really express yourself, maybe we need to work on the composition at that point. That's what I do, you know.
Now, it's funny, not everybody has the budget to do this. And of course, in today's market, we certainly don't have the budget to do it. But certain producers I know from back in the day used to ask a vocalist, what do they like? Like, for example, if a vocalist says, oh, I like, you know, a plush bed, I like flowers, I like candles, I like, and they would show up at the studio and it's laid out with a bed, with candles, with flowers, in the studio.
Wow.
And actually, I did that one time. When I did a duet with Lisa Fisher for my first project, I spoke to her on the telephone for maybe 2 hours. We had never met and we had never sang together. So, and I, just to kind of get an idea of what she liked, and she told me she liked flowers, she liked roses, and she likes this. And so I went out and I had people, I purchased roses and decorated the studio with roses and candles and had our mics facing each other. Now, of course, as a result of that session, we ended up dating for a number of years. But but you know, you have to create the atmosphere, because we were singing a beautiful love song and we didn't even know each other. So you're asking two strangers to come together and connect, you know, with no history. So I said, I need to create an atmosphere of love. And it worked. It worked. I mean, of course, we had a beautiful relationship, but that was years ago. And, you know, And I'll still do that today if I have to, if someone to make a vocalist feel comfortable. But anyway, you know, you never know what you're going to end up doing in the studio to make the session go the way it needs to go.
Oh, totally, Chris. You know, but, you know, give me some of your steps in building your compositions, Chris. I mean, you work with a lot of artists and inspire, you know, also as a solo artist for your own projects, man. You know, give me some of the steps of your compositions. Is it with a team of writers and other session players, or does it really start with you and then finish with you, or do you have other people to finish the projects out?
Well, most of the songs that I've written, I do them by myself. And here lately, I've started collaborating. And basically, like, for example, I'm working on a few tunes for Al Jarreau's upcoming project. And Al is an incredible lyricist. So what I'll do is work on the track and get a melody for him and then hand it over to him and let him, you know, put the lyric in. And in some instances, there are times when I'll just create a track. Like, for example, for one of Peter White's records, I just created the track and sent it to him and said, put whatever melody you hear on top of it. So it just depends. I mean, what the situation is, I mean, even like when I work with Bob James, we wrote a song for Foreplay and we did it together. So it just depends on the situation. I just returned from Europe from a 5-week tour with Al Jarreau, and I was working on a piece for Will Downing, for example. And you know, so it just, sometimes I just write the whole song, or sometimes I want to get the artist's take on it if they're a songwriter and create it and get it to a certain point and then let them take over from there and write the lyric or even perhaps the melody or collaborate on it.
Definitely. No, it's a building process, especially when you work with a lot of talent like Al Jarreau, and who's just, aside from being a great lyricist, he's just a really great vocalist, man. I mean, there's not one thing that he can't really scat and just bring to the table. You know, he's just going to bring it, man. He brings it A-game. Every CD I hear, it's always A1. But, you know, you're absolutely correct. It takes great minds to think alike at times. But also to be open and take the direction and opinions from other great producers and writers. You know, I find myself being open to everybody's creative ideas. You know,
right.
I believe
exactly.
Art is an expression for everybody to partake and participate in. So I just think it's really cool from another great artist and another great producer to come together, man, and just build the magic in the studio, man. I mean, because those are the songs that I feel are going to be timeless 10, 15 years, 20 years down the road, you know, because you guys can go back and just know about it. It's like, man, we killed it on that session.
But I'm going to tell you, too, one of the things that I like, I mean, you know, I've worked on my musicianship for many years, and of course, it's always a continuing process. You never get there. You keep striving to get there.
Right.
But one of the things that I like to do is, you know, play a song in the studio, and the take is the take. I mean, the lead vocal, what all the guys put, that's the take. I mean, and punch as minimal as possible, like they used to do back in the day. I mean, you know, guys would get together and it was the take. I mean, when I played on Kirk Whalum's Cachet record, for example, and I mean, it was Ricky Lawson, Greg Phillinganes, Paul Jackson Jr. on guitar, and the take was the take. I mean, we didn't go back and do a lot of punching and fixing stuff, you know. But on today's music scene, I don't think they're doing that a lot these days. I mean, you know, you get in the studio, you get it perfect, you get it refined. As a matter of fact, on my CD, I did a remake of Luther Vandross' song, If Only For One Night.
Oh, yeah, I heard that one. Mm-hmm.
And I did it live. I mean, the take is the take. The vocal that I did, I mean, we did it without a click track. I was conducting guys through the window and singing. And what you hear is the take. The vocal is the take now from top to bottom.
Wow. But, you know, that's hot, though, Chris. I mean, again, going back to those grassroots of, you mentioned earlier, building that musicianship, man. I talked to everybody. It's like, man, when I was growing up in, you know, 80s and 90s tracking recording, you know, even though I was only 15, 16, I still had an expectation of excellence that I wanted to strive to become, you know,
right.
Because I had a lot of great examples in front of me. You know what I mean? It was all about being a great musician. It was all about knowing your chops as a keyboardist, picking up songs
right.
really quickly on the spot. And like you mentioned, man, today I just feel that if you're punching too much in the studio, how are you going to be able to perform the song live? You know what
exactly.
I mean? If you can't get the rhythm down, if you're not in that pocket as a vocalist or a musician, it's like, man, I can't chop you up too much, because if you get on stage live with me, we're going to have some problems.
Right. And the audience is going to know immediately.
Oh, totally. Because, man, the audience knows your material just like you do. I mean, there's huge fans out there of other artists, and they know if they were musicians, they could probably play all the music, you know, but they go off of memory and what they hear. And yeah, they'll definitely, you know, they'll bust you out on stage, man. It's like, man, that didn't sound nothing like the CD, man.
You're absolutely right. Wow. But yeah, I tell you, man, I've worked long and hard to get to this point as a musician, and I still have a long way to go, because, like I said, you never get there. And I've been fortunate to work with so many giants in this business who are very humble.
Yes,
so
you have.
When I meet musicians, singers, whoever, that have like an ego the size of the planet, it's like it just baffles me, because there's, I mean, you know, when you with giants all around you, how can you have an ego? I mean,
right.
You know, but anyway,
no, I totally agree. It's like, man, maybe you know something that I don't know. And I've been out, man, I've been, you know, doing it for 22 years, Chris, and I still remain a student of music, because it's just endless. I mean, if you stick in one genre, you're going to box yourself in. You know, you're eventually going to have to outsource your creativity to other styles of music. You know, for me, I came from hip-hop and R&B. That was cool. But eventually, I wanted to excel as a keyboardist, so I had to get into the jazz and the smooth jazz community and listen to heavy hitters like George Duke, Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, Joe Sample. You know, these guys are like, man, that's where I want to be. You know, but the great ones are always the oldest. Those are your elders. Those are the guys who heard it all, done it all. You know,
right.
So.
But see, you're challenging yourself to get better, though.
Yeah.
And that's the trick. I mean, I think in today's society, a lot of people just stop where they are and say, you know what, I'm good. I've done enough. You know, this can carry me over. But no. As a musician, you always strive to get better. I mean, I don't care what it is. I mean, pick up a classical book and see if you can read it. You know,
totally.
I mean, just challenge yourself for something totally different.
That's where it's at, man. That just keeps your mind growing. And you'll be surprised, man. You know, a lot of guys, I think, so, oh, man, I'm playing the same thing over and over. I was like, well, keep at it. But otherwise, you know, start listening to some different music. You know, because you know funk backwards and forwards. You know R&B. You know, it's expected. You already know how the changes are going to go. Start getting to jazz, man. That's where the improv and the theory comes in. You know, take your theory and apply it to your application as a musician. Now that's where it's at, you know? So.
Exactly. That's where the challenge comes. That's right. But, and you have to be focused enough to stick with it and not just say, oh, I can't get it. I'm done with it. I'm not going to even mess with it anymore. No, you have to stick with it until, I mean, back in the day, you remember, I don't know if you've ever done it, but you probably have, but transcribed anybody else's solos, for example?
Oh, totally. I mean, it takes time to learn solos, man. That's, you know, it's like you say, there's guys out there who can play great block chords. You know, it takes a skill in itself, and it takes a great ear. But to do a single solo, to learn a solo, man, there's more movements. There's more notes that are being played, single notes, because they're coming faster, different rhythms, different octaves, just the whole range of the keyboards being used, or your bass guitar, whatever it is that you're using. You know, to play those solos, man, it takes timing. It takes a really great ear to really focus on what's going on in that song. And to play back verbatim without sheet music, oh, man, it takes practice to build that ear, man. Now, Chris, you've been recording for a while, man. And, you know, now we're in the world of DAW recordings. You know, I started like in the analog world of recording. And, you know, there's no, you know, secret that analog is still a warmer sounding format to record. But DAW has taken over, and, you know, that's pretty much the new ways of recording. You know, what are your pros and cons of the formats, and what's your current setup that you're tracking on now?
Well, currently, I'm tracking, Pro Tools. I use Logic and Digital Performer. That's pretty much what I use, and of course, live. And sometimes I'll take those tracks, transfer them to 2-inch, and then transfer them back.
Right.
So... Just to get the warmth of the tape, but that's pretty much what I use these days, and or just live players all together for the session.
Now, are there any specific mic pre's that you're using? Solid state or tube? It doesn't matter. Which ones are you tracking?
Tube.
Nice.
Tube. Yeah, I try to stick with tube.
Right.
It's just a warmer sound, and you know it's amazing because you know I go with what sounds great. I don't really get into the meters and what this says, and what, I mean, and of course the average listener probably would, like, so sometimes I have to step back and say, will the average person know what this is supposed to sound like? Because I like to experiment too and just try a different combination of different things. I mean, it could be miking techniques or drum placement or whatever the case may be, just to see if I can come up with a different sound, even find a different snare sound to use or whatever the case may be. I mean, I'll sample my voice. Like one time, I used this sound. Let me show you. Let me see if I can do it right now. For raindrops, but I used it as a snare, a backbeat.
Nice.
And it worked. I mean, just EQ'd a certain way, it worked.
Oh yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah, especially for the slow jams, the slow ballads, got to have that water drop in the background for that snare, maybe the finger snaps over it, just gives you that sexiness on it.
That's exactly right. That's when the ladies start taking off the, anyway.
Oh yeah, yeah. Another show.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Well, you know, as a keyboardist, Chris, hardware synths have been in the game for years. I mean, that's where we started out. But, you know, we're going to the software synth world now, man. Are you using a combination of both, or are you still sticking with the hardware synths like the Motifs, the Tritons, and the Roland library?
Actually, I use a combination of all of them. I really do. And soft synths and outboard gear as well, you know.
Definitely.
Because, you know, I mean, and I may just use one sound from a wave station.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just one, you know, or something. You know, I mean, I still have all the analog, the old gear, too, along with the soft synths, too. So I combine them. I still combine them.
You got to, man. You know, for me, I flip-flop back and forth for years. You know, when soft synths started to come in the game, it was fairly new. But again, I was tracking on my XP30 Roland, my Motif, my Triton,
right.
My, you know, the Emule. I just had racks and racks of modules. Soft synths came in, and a lot of the synth sounds I was using and out of the modules, I could use out of my soft synths.
But, this is true.
You know, but
this
I still feel getting that piano out of a soft synth just doesn't hit the mark yet. You know, I still got to go to my Motif piano.
This is true.
Yeah, I'm sure you agree, man. You know, it's like, man, I love right. The ability to play a soft synth piano. It just doesn't sound authentic to me. Not yet. It's almost there.
And there's something about just touching the knobs on a piece of gear. You know,
oh, chasing those filters and oscillators. Oh yeah, that's, you know.
Yeah, just, you know. You can't beat it. I mean, I'm not, you know, so that's why I still use both. I live in both worlds.
Oh, you got to, man. You know, with the evolution of equipment, man, the business has changed. You know, in the past 15 years, and even more so now in the past 10 years. You know,
right.
Marketing yourself as a musician, your campaign has to change. You know, what steps do you feel that's most effective to brand yourself as a musician or producer to build a solid fan base and also attract the attention of artists that want to work with you? I mean, what's been successful with your route?
Great songs, great tracks, great production. I mean, you know, and of course, you know, you have to keep the cost within reason in today's market, but I think if people listen to your stuff, you can't. There is no such thing as a demo really anymore.
Right. No, yeah, I totally agree. Those days are done.
I mean, yeah, those days are really done. I mean, you won't get a second listen if it's a demo. I mean, you know, unless it's just piano and voice. But people are looking for like finished product now. I mean, the whole production for the most part, and that's how I approach it. Whenever I send somebody a song, I try to give them a complete picture of what it's going to sound like. Of course, without going maybe too extreme and mixing it in detail because something may change about it. But you know, that's pretty much my take on it and how I approach it.
Definitely. Now, that's where it's at, man. You know, good work speaks for itself. And if you're a prolific artist or a songstress or a songwriter, you're going to work with other prolific musicians, too. It's just the combination works well. You guys should have the same work ethics also in the studio. I mean, you're used to putting that time in and not, like I say, sometimes you get that one track, man, but sometimes building a song from the ground up takes a little bit longer when you work with new musicians
yeah.
that you don't have a relationship with. So, you know, like I said, having that song strong takes you a long way.
But you know what I miss, though? It's like, well, back in the day, of course, before family and before all the obligations that you have when you have the time to put in, but sitting there for 10 hours working on one idea, you know?
Yeah.
I miss those days. Like, for example, when I was on tour with Al, we had a few, we have the private tour bus with the bunks and all that stuff, but I would stay up all night because I would take some gear on the road to write. I would stay up for 8 hours straight on the tour bus just working.
Wow.
Just working, creating, because my mind is free. I don't have to worry about driving. I don't have to worry about the obligations with my son and sure. the fam. You know, so it's like that's when I'm able to be very creative, you know. So I'm trying to get back there, of course, with my new CD Zone coming out. And actually, it's available for pre-order on Amazon.com. You know, it's hard to spend that kind of time right now because I'm out promoting. But I'm enjoying it, though, so I can't complain. And you know, sometimes producing yourself, it can be an interesting journey because for me, I'm my own worst critic and I'm hard on myself. So, you know, it's like sometimes you have to back up and say, you know what, you can let that go.
Yeah. We're critical on ourselves. You know what I mean? Because we know what it is we can do as a composer, as an artist. And sometimes you can be too critical and miss the magic and miss the moment. It was right there just because you're just being too hard on yourself. You know, just let the music speak for itself. It's going to take you where it needs to go anyways. You know what I mean? It's a puzzle, man. We just got to put those pieces together.
Right. And, you know, it's funny. One time I produced Mark Whitfield. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a guitarist. But, I mean, the guy, I mean, he studied with George Benson. I mean, he's a monster.
Wow.
And he would play a solo, and he would immediately say, oh, I can do it better. I can do it better. And I would just let him do take after take after take, and I would always go back to the very first one.
Oh, yeah.
When he wasn't thinking about it,
Sure, you know? I mean, that's where it is sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you want to impress the other musicians. There's some other guys in the room. It's like, man, I got to show this guy my chops, you know. But, again, let's not get sidetracked. Focus on what's best for the album. You're going to have your time to shine on stage.
And we have to remember the golden rule. Bernard Purdy told me this years ago. He was one of my instructors at the New School. He told me less is more.
Totally.
So I live by that rule.
Oh, got to. So, yeah. Chris, what's on the musical agenda for 2011?
For 2011, working with Regina Bell, of course, her second gospel project. There's also a young lady by the name of Nikita Clegg Fox. She's a gospel artist as well, incredible vocalist. Al Jarreau, his project, he's probably going to be working on it now, and possibly doing some writing for Will Downing, too. So my plate is kind of full.
Wow. It's a great plate to eat, man.
Hey, it's a great place to eat. I can't complain. I mean, sushi, lobster, you know what I mean?
Oh, man, A1 all the way.
The finest cuisine. I can't complain. I'm a lucky guy.
Hey, there you go, man. A 5-star restaurant. That's the place to eat.
Well, come on to the restaurant. You can come on, too.
Oh, man, I'll eat it all up, Chris. Well, Chris, it's been a true honor having you on my show, man. I would love to have you back and talk about your new projects, your new production works with the soul artist that you're working with, and just to chop it up all over again as musicians, man. I had a really great time chopping it up with you, man. Thank you.
Same here. Anytime. And I'd love to check out what you're doing. Shoot me some stuff.
Oh, definitely, man. We got our contacts, man. I'll definitely shoot yourself your way, man. Let you check me out and see what I got popping.
Cool deal. Hey, I may be able to use it on my next project. Come on now.
Let's do it, man. Spud is always available for tracking and production, man.
All right, now you're talking.
We have a safe 2011, man, and the best of luck to you, Chris. We'll keep in touch.
All right, God bless.
Take it easy.
All right, you too.
Bye.
And a big shout out and thank you to Chris Walker for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. It was a real honor talking to Chris, man. He's a really talented musician, has tons of experience writing and producing for others as well. His collaboration with Al Jarreau, Will Downing, and the list just goes. For more information on Chris Walker, you need to check out his website at www.chriswalkermusic.com. www.chriswalkermusic.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have a Mac or PC, an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod, you open up the iTunes store, type in the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And the track is by Chris Walker, and the title of the track is called Everyday Woman. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
But you deserve this night too. Come on, let me cater to you, baby.
I just want to give you love, baby, just because you're special.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There's no one who means as much. I just gotta tell you.
I'm right here when you need 7 days out. Jobs in a day, but you deserve this night too. Come on, let me cater to you.